Good morning. Grady, in what year did Nebuchadnezzar conquer Babylon? 587. That's right. Very good.
You asked me what year did Nebuchadnezzar conquer Babylon?
Excuse me. Jerusalem was the proper question.
Oh, trick question.
Yes, trick question. Thank you, Jonathan. And also, what year did Titus conquer Jerusalem?
723.
You're thinking 722, and that's the Assyrians, BC. This is Titus, the Roman general, soon to be emperor.
This is
70 AD. All right. We are not going to be talking today about 587. We're going to spend almost our entire day today in the book of Revelation. What I want to do is give you a bird's eye view of what's in there, define some terms, and basically lay out some things so that we can do our study in Revelation. All right? So that's what we're going to do today. Essentially, an overview of the book of Revelation. If you would turn, please, to chapter 1. And if we have time at the end, I think we will, we're going to talk about the time references in the book. But in general, in terms of what's in here, all right, you've got chapter 1, which is your general opening, okay? And all we're going to do is we're going to talk about chapters and groups of chapters, okay? The scene in chapter 1 is John is on an island, exiled, and receiving a vision. All right, that's the scene of chapter 1. Chapter 1 definitely bleeds into chapter 2 and chapter 3, but in general, chapter 1 is your opening. Chapters 2 and 3 are letters. Letters to churches. And so in chapter 2, there's the letter to the church of Ephesus, to the church of Smyrna, church in Pergamum, church in Thyatira, and then chapter 3, to the church in Sardis, to the church in Philadelphia, to the church in Laodicea. Okay? Two chapters of letters. Then in chapters 4 and 5, you have a scene in heaven. This we've already spent a good amount of time on, because that's where you've got the four living creatures, where you've got God sitting on his throne, you've got a lake. We spent a lot of time here in Ezekiel and comparing these, all right? So that's that. Then you have a long section, which you could divide. You've got seven seals, starting in chapter 6. You've got seven trumpets in chapter 8. Then you have seven bowls in 15, 16. Okay? If you want to subdivide that, you of course could, and we will as we get more into things. But you've got this long section, 6 through 16, which are a bunch of sevens. Okay? Seven seals, seven trumpets, seven bowls. At the end of the groups of sevens, all right, you've got 17 and 18, and recently we've been talking about this, okay, 17 and 18, and related to that, like the first part of 19, but we'll call it 17 through 19, and these are just rough buckets, all right, and this is the defeat of Babylon. Okay? The defeat of Babylon. Chapter 20, you have the 1,000 years and pretty much everything from 20 through the end, 22, except the very last part. It's good news. There is a war. we win. But there's a war, all right? But it's a brief part of it, okay? 20, so really 20, and we'll talk in a minute why this one is super important. 20 to we'll just say 20 to 22. You've got millennium plus the end, okay? And then at the very end, when you get to 22, verse 6, okay? You've got what pairs with the opening. You have the closing. Where we leave the scene in heaven and the big war, and we get back to, okay, John is back. He's on the island. Final pronouncements. Okay? Here's your general structure. Like I said, you can certainly break down, especially this big section in here. And some obvious divisions are six seals, six trumpets, six bowls. But in there, you also have some other things as well. Okay? So that's the general thrust of Revelation. Now, this is meant, really, this discussion today is really meant for those of you who haven't done a lot of serious study in the book of Revelation. So if there's anything that you have questions about, feel free to ask. Okay. Now, in terms of approaching Revelation, you've got different approaches. And so I'm going to write some terms down related to that. You have general futurist approaches. Okay. Futurists. What we mean by that is, generally speaking, probably everything in the book, except for parts of the opening and parts of the closing, probably just about everything in the book is in the future, from our perspective. Not from John's perspective. From John's perspective, I mean, pretty much everything was, because he was talking about things that would be coming. For the futurist, pretty much everything is in the future. Okay, that's why they call it the futurist. If you think about premillennialism, and dispensationalism is one form of premillennialism, the rapture thing, left behind thing, those are all forms of futurist interpretation. Okay, they see these things coming in the future. They are not past from our perspective, except for this part and this part. Okay. Then you've got this other group, which you might call maybe an idealist, maybe a spiritualist, I don't know. You've got this other group that says that's the wrong way to approach it. It's not really future, it's not really past, it's a whole lot of stuff that's relevant to all of us at all times. It's not really trying, for the most part, to lay out, here's a sequence of events. Some of them, sometimes, and there's a wide variety of approaches, which is why I'm just talking very general terms. There are some of them, for example, that will look at the letters and go, this is seven distinct phases of the life of the church in history. And so it is past, but it's also future, because it's all through time. Some people will say, no, it's really not supposed to be looked at that way. It's just general. Look at it as a book of theology, not a book of either history or what's going to happen in the future. And then you've got preterist interpretations, which just means past or former. There's lots of terms that ultimately come from Latin. That's one of them. So preterist, what do they do? What they say is, and essentially, the large majority of preterists, they say a lot of this is in the past, all right? And for the bulk of them, there's a pretty clear place where we're not just guessing, and you know I'm one of those people, we're not just guessing what's past and what's future. There's really a very clear place where you're like, this is exactly where we are, and that's right here at the millennium, okay? Preterists say, this stuff is all past. When you get here, we're in the millennium, And so therefore, that's not past, that's present. And then, of course, everything after this is future. Okay? That's the general preterist interpretation. There is a very small group of people who are called full preterists that actually say even the millennium and the resurrection and everything really has already passed. Right? It's a very, very small group of people. So, yes, sir.
To say that that last group would not be considered orthodox.
Correct, because they would deny a physical resurrection of the body. Yes, they would not be considered within the pale of orthodoxy. There's lots of really great godly people in all of these groups. All right, I definitely think some are wrong, but as do many of you, but these are debatable things, all right? Different approaches. And the reason why you really got to discuss this with the book of Revelation is how you come down on this drastically changes how you interpret everything in the book, all right? There's all sorts of things in biblical studies that are interesting debates, but really just change a little bit. All sorts of things. This one is pretty much, I mean, all of this. Is this stuff in the past or in the future? Or is it neither or both? All right? Drastically changes how you read the book. So if you're going to read it at all, you're ultimately going to have to take a position. All right? Or just go, I don't know. And as we've said many times, I don't know is a perfectly reasonable position. And it's certainly where we should all start. Okay? So those are general terms. Now, related terms, but not exactly the same. Overlapping, but not the same, okay, is some words I've already mentioned, okay? Here's a word, premillennial. I think I spelled that correctly. Is that supposed to be an E? Yeah. Spelling is hard. Okay. Pre-millennial, right? Before the millennium, okay? What's the millennium? 20. All right, let's go to chapter 20 real quick. If you would, go there. Chapter 20. Then I saw an angel coming down from heaven, holding in his hand the key to the bottomless pit and a great chain. And he seized the dragon, the ancient serpent, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years, and threw him into the pit and shut it and sealed it over him, so that he might not deceive the nations any longer until the 1,000 years were ended. After that, he must be released for a little while. Then I saw thrones, and seated on them were those to whom the authority to judge was committed. And I saw that the souls of those who had been beheaded for the testimony of Jesus and for the word of God, and those who had not worshipped the beast or its image and had not received its mark on their foreheads or their hands, they came to life and reigned with Christ for 1,000 years. The rest of the dead did not come to life until the 1,000 years were ended. This is the first resurrection. Blessed and holy is the one who shares in the first resurrection. Over such, the second death has no power. But they will be priests of God and of Christ, and they will reign with him for 1,000 years. All right, so you have several 1,000 years. The Latin word for 1,000 is mille. Okay, so when somebody calls themselves a millennial, all right, not in terms of the millennials, modern, though it's related, right? Premillennial, they're talking about this. All right, if you look in the New Testament, all right, you're not going to find lots of things where you have groups of 1,000 years, all right? That's actually just here. In large spectrum, in terms of Christian theology, there's several large categories, all right? Premillennial, amillennial, and postmillennial, okay? This is basically some divisions you can put basically everyone in, all right? And all of that naming is based on this one thing in Revelation. Not Paul, not Jesus, except for here. All right, not the Gospels. This is all the naming for these positions comes from this chapter. The arguments for the theology of these positions come from everywhere, but the naming specifically comes from the thousand year and deciding what those are. All right, and so in a second we're going to go through exactly what those are. Somebody had their hand up and wanted to say something. Yeah.
I'm just going to, maybe you're getting into it, but all is the negative particle, and really premillennialism and postmillennialism are sub. Should be under millennialist, and amillennial means, so a millennialist could be a pre or a post, but an amillennialist says there's not a millennium, not a physical or a sequential thousand years.
Right. So let's go through those terms and really muddy the waters, all right? Throughout Christian history, there have been all of these things, all right, all of these groups. And depending on who you look at, you're going to see different groups. These days, the premillennialists are winning in terms of total numbers and books being sold and movies, all right? They're winning, and they are totally clobbering in America. They're totally clobbering everybody. That hasn't always been the case. The current flavor of premillennialism, the one that's big, is actually very new. It's just a couple hundred years old. But all of these groups have been represented through Christian history. Okay, you've got early fathers, early church fathers. There were all of these. Okay, Augustine, I believe you would put him in the amillennial camp, for example. Some fathers earlier than him were premillennial, and so this really has spanned everything. Now, and let's go ahead and define the terms, all right? Pre means before the thousand years. Post means after the thousand years. And as Edward said, is a negative particle, saying we're not really talking about a literal thousand years, all right? So, let's go through them. Premillennial says this. Chapter 20 has not happened yet, okay? That is still in the future. It could be tomorrow. It could be 1,000 years from now. Typically, most of the hype is it's like next month. All right, something's going to happen in Iran. Suddenly, they're going to start building the temple in Jerusalem. Boom. It's about to happen. All right, that tends to be it. But from a theological standpoint, the premillennial position is it's in the future. All right, it just hasn't happened yet. Could be tomorrow. Could be 1,000 years. The amillennial and even the postmillennial, okay? What these guys are going to say is it's going on now. Now, for many amillennials, they'll be like Edward and say, there's not really 1,000 years. It's not a time frame per se. The thing that really joins these two, all right, is the belief, all right, that Jesus right now is reigning in his kingdom, in its fullness, all right? Not a future thing coming up. There's future things, but he is reigning right now as the Son of David on the throne of David in heaven, right now reigning. Some of these guys will say, no, that is incorrect, all right? Both of these groups will ultimately say that. And what the amillennialists will generally say is, when did the reign of Christ start? First century. Okay? First century. This church has historically been amillennial. All right? Jesus' reign started in the first century, continues now, and will continue forever. Now, postmillennialists, all right, they come in actually different flavors as well, because everything is in different flavors. Because this book is often just not clear. Okay, what do the postmillennialists say? What the postmillennialists say is the millennium is, for most of them these days, already happened or is happening right now. Okay, and then Jesus, we are waiting for another coming of Jesus at the end after this millennium. Okay. So another thing to throw in there for the premillennial, Jesus will return to the earth before this millennium happens. Okay? For the post-millennial, Jesus will return again to the earth after this period has happened. Okay? Now, some post-millennialists would say that the millennium has already started, but it didn't start in the first century. Some of them would say it actually started later, depending on your flavor. Most of the post-millennialists I read today, they all say we're in the millennium. It's not 1,000 years. It's not a literal, that's your time frame. It's a meant to be a very long period of time. It could be 2,000 years. It could be 10,000 years. But the post-millennial is saying, all right, that it is happening now. Now, one big differentiator between the post-millennialist and the amillennialist, because they do need to be distinguished, is there is more of an element of an earthly reign in the post-millennialist than the amillennialist. The amillennialist is more of a spiritual reign in the world. Things actually might, in terms of the total population of the world, might really go terribly in terms of how many people will be converted. All right? There could be actually a very small group of Christians throughout time before Jesus comes back. The post-millennialists are not like them. They're very different in that they say it's not negative. It's positive. And Christianity will ultimately win, is what the post-millennialists say. Yeah.
I have a question about the amillennial position.
Yeah.
So if 1,000 years is just kind of symbolic, how do you decipher what is taken symbolically and what should be taken literally?
That's a good question. And for the amillennialists and the postmillennialists, we'll also have to answer this. What they'll generally say is, it's hard. Yeah, that's why there's a lot of debate. One of the appeals for many people for premillennial dispensationalism is I don't think they're consistent, but they at least come up with a system that is theoretically consistent and says, everything is literal. Absolutely everything. There is no symbolic interpretation, spiritualist interpretation of the book of Revelation. It's all literal. It is 1,000 years, all right? Creatures that are both locusts and scorpions will actually show up, okay? All right, that's...
But you're inconsistent.
In this.
That's the problem with the woman toward the sun.
Yeah, and stars, you know... Are stars going to fall to the earth? We know that if stars fell to the earth, there would be no earth. Like, it really would be completely gone, right? So we would say, those of us who aren't premillennial and dispensationalists would say, you're not actually consistent with it. But the answer is, it's hard. And you really have to take it on a case-by-case basis, and it's hard. And so you come up with arguments. You look at it and go, could this be? And then you think of reasons why it needs to be. Or it makes the most sense to say it is this way. Yeah.
Thank you.
Time is often confusing. The creation narrative, Genesis, 7 days. Well, how long is the day to God? Is it one of his days or one of our days? I think it was Peter...
We might actually get to that verse today, depending on what time.
God is 1,000 years. Yeah. 1,000 years is like a day. So, and the largest number you'll find is in Revelation. They talk about the 440,000. There's no concept of a million or billions back in those days. You have to put your mind into John's, get John's mind into yours and get his perspective on time. Quite often 1,000 years in the Bible used to be an indefinite number. It was just a big, like we use the word gazillion. You know?
Big, right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really confusing to distinguish when they're talking about an actual 1,000 years and an indefinite period. It's very difficult.
Well, that's... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I had a question. Either now or whenever it's a good time, can you talk for a minute why... Some people are kind of hung up on the actual physical country of Israel.
Mm-hmm. This has to do with a subgroup of this group. All right. dispensational premillennialism, all right? Subgroup within premillennialism. Dispensationalism is somewhat new, and it has to do with their literal interpretation. All right, it's really based in that when they look at the promises given to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Daniel, and David, they look at those and say, yes, we love Jesus and he is reigning, but he does not fulfill those promises. Okay? Those promises are not fulfilled in Jesus yet. Therefore, they still have to be fulfilled. Therefore, there must be a nation in Israel with a Davidic king, who will be Jesus, in the future, physically geolocated, because those promises haven't been fulfilled, and they must be fulfilled literally. So that is that group specifically, and that's why they do it, because they're trying, kudos for them, they are trying to be consistent with their method of interpretation. We just think it's completely wrong. And the reason, essentially, we think it's wrong is we look at the apostles, all right, and we say, how did you interpret the Old Testament? How did, when you look at David, when you look at Abraham, how did you interpret the Old Testament? Did you interpret it literally? And the answer is, clearly no. And so, therefore, we do not hold to that method of interpretation. But that's why they do, because they do hold to that. They say God promised this exact stuff in terms of land and kingship. It hasn't happened. It must happen in the future. That's also why they need a temple to be rebuilt in Jerusalem, because the temple is mentioned in Revelation. And so if Revelation is in the future, you're going to have a temple. And so therefore, that's why it's a super huge deal, all right? Well, you got to get the you got to get the Muslims off the Temple Mount, because we have to have a temple there. Okay, that's them, not us.
So yeah. Another thing to add, Catherine, is that those groups usually set an equality between the ancient nation state of Israel, the people of God in the Old Testament, and they equate that with the modern Zionist movement that currently occupies the land that's called Israel. Since like 1947, and they say those two things are one and the same.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
You theoretically could be a dispensationalist and say that that's not the case, that the modern nation state of Israel is not it at all. We're waiting for something in the very distant future for all of those things to happen. That is not how dispensationalists actually work, generally speaking. They're all very excited about the current modern nation state of Israel. But it is not required from their system, but that is how it works.
So, what would they say to the state that Christians are spiritual Jews? As Paul said, if you are in Christ, you are Abraham's seed.
They will say, in a sense, yes, we are. We have received the blessings of Abraham. Is like one of the phrases they'll say, yes, we do receive those blessings. What they will not say...
physical, political.
Yeah, they will not say that we won't be there at that physical nation of Israel. All right? For the dispensationalists, we, as a group, will be raptured. All right? We will be raptured and removed from the earth, all right? And then the millennium will happen, all right? And the millennium will not be us. We will be in heaven. The millennium will be the Jews, fulfilling those promises. Now, we do believe, we agree with them, in that we do receive the blessings of the Abrahamic covenant. The difference is we go further, and we say we don't just receive the blessings of the Abrahamic covenant. We are just as much a part of the Abrahamic covenant. Better yet, we are the intended recipients of the Abrahamic covenant through Jesus. All right? As are all of those who are Abraham's seed. All right? Those aren't just the physical children of Abraham. Those are all of those who are in Christ, if you take that part of the language. Or in the New Testament, when you've got Jesus talking to the Jews, who's Abraham's seed? Who's the Son of God? Those who do what God asks. All right? Who are not? Well, talking to the Pharisees, those that lie, and those who kill the prophets. Physical seed of Abraham, not the children of God. All right? So for us, that's the distinction. The dispensationalist recognizes that we receive some of the promises of Abraham. They have to, because the New Testament really brings those in. They just try to make that distinction and say, there's something different from us. We aren't actually Jews.
So they have a problem with Paul saying no difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Say, well, there's still a lot of difference.
How do the premillennialists, dispensationalists, deal with the words of Christ on the cross when he says it is finished? It's like, if you believe in dispensationalism, he's got to come back again in some way.
Yeah. But really all the systems have something future, except for a subgroup of the preterists. Right? We even have something future, right? Because we do believe that Jesus will come back and there will be a future physical resurrection from the dead. We're here, right? From a preterist or an amillennialist standpoint, we're here, right? But that hasn't happened yet. We're not at 22. We're not in 21 either. We're both of these groups essentially have us right there.
Okay, but
dispensationalists are right here on the timeline.
It still points to Jesus having to come again to do what he's done, already done. I mean, the way I look at it. I think
you're right. Yeah, we believe that Jesus came to fulfill the promises to Abraham and to David, and that he really fulfilled them. We believe that. Yeah, they don't. Not fully. They say that is still future. So they do look at things very differently. So they would say it is finished would be a little bit different.
They have a huge emphasis on the second coming, where we look at Christmas and say, Christmas is the best.
In terms of overlaps, and this is where we'll end this time. Generally speaking, all right, in theory, you can have a premillennialist that's not a futurist. All right? But that's a pretty solid group right there. Premillennialists and futurists are generally the same. I was surprised, but I read somebody recently who was a scholar who actually was an amillennialist but also a futurist. But this is a pretty common group, okay? Amillennialists can take all sorts of different approaches to Revelation, okay? I think most preterists are going to end up being most postmillennialists, all postmillennialists possibly, will end up being preterists. Maybe not all, but that's generally the case. And so if you think that most of this stuff has already happened, all right, then you're probably a preterist. Now, a lot of amillennialists will essentially put us here too, because they don't think this stuff is historical anyway. It's not laying out a historical sequence. It's theology, not history. If you want to dig into this, because I'm not going to spend a long time explaining all of these views, I do not think it is a good use of all of our time. There is a book called Four Views on Revelation. All right, it has, if I recall correctly, a premillennialist, a premillennialist dispensationalist, because they're different, a preterist, and then I think he calls himself an idealist. All right. So if you want to see those different views defended by people who hold those views, because those are four different people all defending their own views, it's a great book. It's like that thick. It's good. It's good to read. But this is, whenever you're going through this book, you're going to have to piece it together in some sort of coherent picture. And this is typically how people have been doing it. There's all sorts of variations among individuals and groups and over time. Okay? But you're going to have to come up with something. Now, in terms of this church, is just to say it for those of you who may not know this, all right? This church tends to be amillennialist, all right? And at least these days, tends to be more preterist, all right? Some of us really, really want and think postmillennialism might be true. And by some of us, I think that might just be me. But, you know. Depending on my day, I go between these two. I'm solidly here. Maybe it's just because I want it to be true. No, it's not that, hopefully. Anyway. Amillennialism, all right? That's generally what you're going to be hearing in our discussion of the book. It's just to be clear where we're coming from here. It's going to be this, all right? Crazy postmillennials. Yeah.
Some of the younger people, you might mention that.
Oh yeah, so Hal wrote a book. What year was this that he did this? This was a long time ago. He wrote a book, Who is Israel? What is a Jew? Where is Jerusalem? A Biblical Mandate for Prophetic Reformation in the 21st Century. Just look up Hal Brunson. It's Hal, who was the pastor here for a very, very long time. He was an avid, amillennialist, avid anti-dispensationalist, as he should be. And so it's a good book. All right, so if you want to see all the views, and it would be a good thing for you to do so, all right, go get that Four Views on Revelation, because it's four different perspectives by the people who hold them. There's also a parallel commentary, which you might find useful as well. It's basically a commentary on Revelation for all four views going through the entire book, all right? It's like that thick. If you, on every situation, want to see, okay, how would a futurist handle this? Then that's a useful commentary. Yeah.
So do postmillennialists believe that it's a literal 1,000 years?
Some do, some don't. Yeah.
I would say in general, Eric drew a very bold line between amillennial and postmillennial in practice. My experience is not that vast, but. These people are much, much closer to one another, and the hard line is between the top and the bottom two. In other words, most postmillennial people will say, yeah, I see your point. And most amillennial people say, I wish I could be a postmillennialist, but I'm not quite as optimistic as you are. But
they would be...
Venn diagram. All right, we could do that.
We need a tree that has like the theory, and then it just branches off with all the different subcategories of it.
Sounds like a good school assignment.
Let's do this. That's a lot of
things.
So we are definitely out of time, but if there are any other live questions that are best to be answered here, we should answer them. Okay.
Especially for our young people, obviously there's some questions. I think they should think about it and maybe bring some questions next time, because I think they hear things just like my boys do. I'm sure all their friends that are basketball people that are Christian are all in that top. And it's just, if you're in a certain segment of evangelicalism, that's just assumed.
Yeah.
I mean, there is no other position.
When I'm around family, right, it's not uncommon, not terribly uncommon, either family or just old Christian relations I've had, to hear something along the lines of, man, it's all about to happen. I'm just sure it's all about to happen. Jesus is about to come back. It's just getting terrible. That is specifically dispensational premillennialism, all right? Because what they're doing is they're seeing... world's getting real bad, all right? Because the Revelation describes lots of really bad things happening, all right? World's getting really bad. It's getting ready for that. Jesus has got to be coming back soon. That's coming from this general milieu of thinking, right? Because this is the popular notion. All right. I also agree there's really lots of bad things about the earth. But I don't see them as signs, and I don't think we have any particular reason to think they're signs for the book of Revelation to happen. All right? Because that's what they're thinking. They're thinking, it's all going bad. Revelation. It's all about to unfold. All right? And for us, all right, especially since this church is not just me, but you know, this church is so amillennial and preterist. Right? No. Maybe not. I don't know. Probably not. Stop being a dispensationalist. Anyway. It'll all pan out in the end. Yeah, exactly. Yes. There's some value to that position. There is. It holds a truth.
Scriptural millennialist.
What's that?
Scriptural millennialist.
Well, this is what you say if you want to say, well, I believe in biblical theology. I don't know. I don't hear people using that term, but it sounds like something you could say. They probably did. I don't do systematic theology. I believe biblical theology.
All claim that they're scriptural.
They do. All right. We'll be revisiting. You know, I try to put my biases out there. You know what my biases are. You will see a little postmillennial come out sometimes, but mostly it's going to be that as we go through it. Next time we're going to at least start with discussing the time references in Revelation. All right, that's specifically what we're going to be talking about. Most of them are at the beginning and the end. Okay, specific time references. All right, not time references in terms of 587 BC, which Taylor has down. Okay, totally. Not those time references, but when is this thing going to happen? How quick is it supposed to happen? That's where we'll start next Lord's Day, Lord willing. Okay? No other final questions? Okay. Let's close in prayer. Pam, you pray for us, please.